From team headquarters, this is the 49ers Studios Podcast. It's time for another 49ers Studios Podcast. I'm Joe Fan, joined by 49ers wide receiver Marquise Goodwin. Marquise, glad to have you on the podcast, man. And it's been fun watching you so far through the preseason and training camp. Obviously, been playing well as the team gets ready for the regular season. How have things been for you in your new career in the Bay Area?
First off, thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to be here, very excited to be in the Bay Area. Everything's been going great, man. I love my team. I love everything about it. The whole organization as a whole has treated me well in my time here. So I look forward to the time that we get to spend together.
How would you describe what's gone on so far? I think everyone knows Marquise Goodwin, the track star, the go route specialist, but we've seen you really evolve, and I'm sure it's something you know you've been capable of, that full route tree, but we've seen it on display even against the Minnesota Vikings in the preseason. And so do you feel like you've evolved?
I definitely have evolved, man. From the player I was coming out of college, this young, wide-eyed rookie, you know, a little skinny dude who they thought could only run go routes. And they, I mean, you know, whoever scouted and whoever thought that's all I was capable of.
I think your speed is something to behold. I mean, there's just not many players in this league who can keep up with you. And so I'm curious, just going back, I mean, obviously you've been fast for a long time, but at what point in your childhood did you realize, okay, not only am I fast, but like I'm really fast, like,
oh yeah,
world class?
Summer of 2000, really, when I first started running track and playing football.
Is that junior high? Is that high school?
No, that was elementary.
Elementary school.
Yeah, for me. I was 9 years old, 9 years young, and that's when we knew I had some juice.
And what race was that? I mean, at what point were you on the football field? Were you running track? I mean, give me a moment where, I mean, did you run a race against some kids and just dust them by 50 yards? I mean, tell me the story there.
It was the first play of my little league football game, and I was at running back. First and goal, first play of the game, and I took it to the house on a 38 toss. My coach, my little league coach, loved calling that play for some reason. He saw me run it a million times at practice, and the same result was at practice that was in the game. And he tossed it, hit that corner. Once I get an edge, it's a wrap. If your angle is off, it is a wrap.
How many yards was that?
I can't remember exactly how many yards, but I say probably like 50, 60.
Yeah, probably like 70 time. Even. I mean, revisionist history, you know, probably like a 90-yard run now at this point.
Yeah, let's say 90 then.
99 yards to the house. I mean, he's on the one-yard line. Give him the 38 toss, and he's gone. You got the corner. I think that's how I remember. I'm pretty sure that's, you know, I haven't seen the tape to disagree, so let's go with that.
We can dig it up.
And then you go to Texas, and you're still balancing football and track. Before we get to football, and I want to touch on family and your faith as well, two things I know that are very important to you. And I know everyone knows your track career, but I'm just curious. I want to talk about the Olympics a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because what a moment to be able to represent your country, put on USA across your chest, and compete with the best athletes around the world. Nothing can compare to that. And so what was the most special part about being a part of the Olympic Games in London 2012?
Doing something that anybody that I've been associated with, they never had that opportunity to travel across the waters, opportunity to represent, you know, their own country, their own church. The people who didn't get this opportunity, I was representing much more than myself. I had a lot of people back home depending on me to maximize that opportunity. Where I come from, I didn't come up with a lot of money, so I didn't travel a lot. My mom's first time traveling on a plane was to see me compete for the Olympic trials.
Where was that?
To Eugene, Oregon. And so, you know, just to have that opportunity to do those kind of things, it was very humbling for me, and it was a great experience in the sense of, wow, I look at where I come from. I look at the circumstances I came up in, and I didn't let it define me. I was resilient through it. I overcame it, and it made me stronger as a human being. It made me be able to really take on anything that I had in front of me.
What other circumstances?
Circumstances as far as being on welfare, being on Section 8 housing, growing up in poverty, growing up without a father. I had every excuse in the book. I had three younger siblings, all girls, one of them disabled, and my mom doing it on her own, along with my help. You know, it was a difficult time. And so, you know, that really taught me what resilient was all about. Because my life was great. Like, it was still good, even though we were in those circumstances. Like, I didn't know any better. I didn't know any different because I hadn't been out and seen any different. And so when I finally got out and start seeing different people, seeing different things, I didn't even really hang around a white crowd until I got to high school. Moved out at 14 years old. Nobody really knows that. Moved out of my house with my mom, 14 years old, and I was taken in by my summer track coach. Shortly after that, I was taken in by a white family who ended up being a great family to me, very supportive, and still family to this day.
Wow. How long, I got this whole list of questions, but that's quite the bomb to drop. I mean, so how long did you live with this family?
The Kirpis family, that's their name.
Yeah.
I lived with them from basically my middle sophomore year to through senior year of high school, and they helped me so much. They helped my mom so much, my whole family. It's like they took my whole family in when they took me in.
How far away is this from Rowlett? Where are you at this point?
This is in Rowlett.
This is in Rowlett. Okay,
this is
so
why
you're close?
I stayed in Rowlett. Okay. This is the reason I was able to stay in Rowlett.
So you're close to home. Mm-hmm. And how'd you get connected with this family? Through the high school?
Austin Kirpis is one of my best friends in the whole world.
Okay.
He was a year younger than I am. And he was on my football team. He was a freshman, little weird white dude, lanky, mm-hmm. Had all the tools to be successful, and he was very successful. But he was just different. And I've always liked to be around people who are different, people who kind of outcast. Like, I don't go after the most popular person and try to befriend them. I went out to him. He looked like he needed some advice at one point in time. And we had this little team builder event that we would do each year, and we would all go bowling. But how coach would do, he would set like the leaders of the team in each group, and then he would place random guys in his lane, and it's like a team builder, get to know each other. He happened to be in my group, and he just kept on talking about himself, like how he was skinny and how he just felt like, you know, he just self-deprecation. Is what he likes to call it. And he would make jokes, and I'd be like, bro, like, you know, what's going on? Like, you need help? What's up? Talk to me. And we just got close after that. And so one day I was like, hey, bro, I'm going to come to your house. I'm going to see what you about. Like, you know, I never really had any white friends. I'm going to come try to learn you, you know, get to know you. Went to his house. I mean, I had Mama Tammy, she had cookies everywhere, candy cake, blueberry muffins, like she was cooking dinner, and it was just like, dang, bro, you get this every day, like anytime you want. And he was like, yeah, that's normal, you know. And I thought that was so cool, and I was so appreciative of that. And after that, it was like they wanted me to come over often, and I consider them family now. Nick, Austin, Lee, those are like my brothers. They are my brothers. And it got so serious to where Tammy and Chris, they're like two secondary parents to me. I got her name tattooed on my arm. That's how serious it is for me. Because coming from where we from in the era and the world we live in, for a white family to take in a black guy like me and that looks like I do, that's huge. For them just to trust me in their home, to trust me around everything, it was just...
But how do you go from being best friends and going over there? I mean, that's a standard thing, right? Everyone grows up, they have their best friends. You hang out all the time. You have sleepovers, whatever. But to moving in with them?
Well, I mean, I had differences with the people that I lived with before. It's just normal. You know, that's why you made to be with your family and your people. And I didn't really realize that until, you know, I was in that situation, and it was just like, I got a lot of love shown to me, don't get me wrong, but it was a lot of hard times too. And so we had major disagreements, and I just didn't feel comfortable at times. And so I would just ask them if they could help me. Like, it would be times I hadn't eaten. I know what it's like to go days without eating. I know what it's like to go days without. I didn't even have a. This is the reason. This the way that. This is what got them to allow me to live with them. I didn't have a bed in high school. I didn't have my own bed. I slept on the floor at somebody else's house. You know what I'm saying? So when I got the opportunity to go to their house, man, it was like, dang, I get to sleep in a bed, like my own bed. And most people, like, they'll look at this and they'll be like, dang, it's just a bed. No, it was the best sleep that I could get. Like, you go from sleeping on a hard floor with a cover covering you up with a pillow to a bed, it's the best sleep in the world.
So during this time where you're living with different families, how often are you seeing your mom and your sisters?
The first year I went 8 months without seeing my mom and sisters, and they lived 40 minutes away.
Wow.
Second year I probably saw them once every few months, because my mom didn't have a lot of money. She had to take care of my sisters. She was working. She had to do what she had to do. And then, but she would come to games, you know, whenever she could, and support me and track meets and everything. And, so I very rarely saw them throughout high school. And I missed out on 4 to 8 years of my sisters growing up.
So trying to connect the dots here. So your family was in Rowlett. You were still in Rowlett, or in high school you were at
what happened was we moved to Rowlett. Moved to Rowlett from Arlington. Before Arlington, we lived in Lubbock,
okay.
West Texas.
Gotcha.
We lived in Arlington for a year. I was born and grew up in West Texas till I was 10.
Got it.
Moved
okay.
to Arlington. Then we moved to Rowlett. Well, that's how Section 8 housing works, by the way.
Got it.
We move whenever the government says we have to, or the landlord. It's not like, oh, okay, we stay in this house as long as we can. Nah. And so we were having to move every year, relocate, different city. And I finally got to Rowlett, and I just was like, I'm tired of moving. Like, I want to be around people, get used to people, like, get to used to a system, coaches, people who, like, are very supportive of me. And that's really how it kicked off. My mom, she lived 40 minutes away at the time in Oak Cliff, which is outside of, like, south of Dallas. And, so I very, very rarely got to see them.
I feel like this is a good segue into your sister. What struck me, I didn't know this backstory. I've since done a little bit of research, but it was one of your pressers a couple of weeks ago, and I don't remember the question, but it was something to the effect of, are you worried about this? Are you nervous about that? Are you stressed about this? And your answer was something to the effect of, I have a sister who has never walked a day in her life, and so I don't really worry about that kind of stuff. I'm just blessed to be here, and I wake up and thank God every day. And so tell us about who is your sister? What's her name? What's the age difference? Doing some research, she has cerebral palsy, I understand.
Yeah, my sister's name is Deja. She's 25. She'll be 26 in September. Wasn't expected to live like past 7 months, and now here she is about to be 26 years young. It's just a true blessing, man. And she lives in Dallas with my mom. She's there full time. That's been my main motivation my whole life. You think about it, and we take so many things for granted. And here's a quick story. She lived with me my third year in Buffalo, and she stayed with me the whole year. I ended up breaking my ribs twice that year, but it was a great experience for me. I learned a lot more about my sister. One of the things I did learn is that she, we were just sitting down, and I was showing up pictures on my phone, and I was like, Deja, who is that? Like, who? I joke with her often, like, who is that pretty girl right there? She like, she looked, and then I had to zoom in. And I'm like, who is this on the picture? And she's like, I don't know. I'm like, okay, let me go to another picture. Who is this? And it's clearly a picture of her. She's like, I don't know. I'm like, can you see it? And she was like, well, it kind of looks like mama, but I don't know who that is. And I said, Deja, that's you. She said, oh. And I said, you don't know what you look like? And she was like, I don't look at myself in the mirror every day. And immediately I started bawling, like dropping tears. You take that stuff for granted every day. And I put in her wheelchair, and I had a tall mirror, and I rolled her to it and let her see herself. Her first time seeing her whole body. And she just sitting there in her chair, like, dang, this is what it looked like. This is what I'm in. Like, she can look down and look at it, but it's different when you see your whole body in the mirror. And I'm like, dang, that was eye-opening for me, because things I take for granted, like getting up, waking up, being able to do things on my own. Here she is. She don't even get to see herself in the mirror. She don't even know what she look like half the time. So ever since then, I show her every day who she is, what she look like, so she can embrace that. How I expect her to be happy with the body she's in when she don't know, even know what it looked like.
How has she changed you?
She changed me so much. I was headed down a dark road, moved out, and I ain't have a care in the world. But my faith and my sister have always kept me on point. And it's always like, kept me on the right track. As soon as I veer off, something will happen. She'll talk to me. How you doing? You been doing the right thing. Like, even with my marriage, she just like, you know, take care of your wife. You got to treat her, you know, treat her the right way and do the right things and stuff like that. Just giving me advice. And she's very smart. We hold conversations just like this. And she's very, very smart. Yeah, she's very smart, but she's changed me. She'll pray with me. She prays. She's the reason I pray. One day, and people ask, like, why do you wake up so early? My wife, she gets so mad at me because I'm
a How early?
Like 6 o'clock for no reason. Without an alarm. I wake up like that every day. And it's because when I was younger, I would hear my sister in her room next door, and she would be talking to herself, praying to God, asking if she could just walk, if she could just get up, if she could just do this and that. And so when you grow up hearing that, it's like, dang, well, she in there wishing and I can do it. So what's the point in me just laying here being lazy? You know what I'm saying? Like, I got to do more. I have to do more.
So would you say faith has always been a big part of your life, or has that been something that's grown through your life, given your relationship with her?
Faith has definitely grown me and allowed me to mature, and it has been a part of my life since I was younger. But I ain't gonna lie, like, I didn't go to church every Sunday, I didn't read my Bible every day, but the more and more I grew, the more I did rely on my faith, and I did like see early on, I was able to see early on like what having a little faith could do for you and how it could change your life and shape your life. And I gained most of that from her, because she never walked, but she still has faith in God that he is going to allow her to walk one day. And she truly believes that in her heart. Like, if you hear her speak, she speaks with a certain tone that is serious. And you feel it. You feel it on your skin. Like, you feel the spirit. And that's how I know it's real.
Do you guys have a thing, like, that's you and her? I mean, something, whether it's an inside joke or something you guys always do, you know, when you guys are FaceTiming, talking on the phone. I mean, I'm guessing you guys talk pretty regularly, or when you guys see each other. I mean, I see a smile on your face. I feel like there's something coming to mind.
Yeah, I keep a lot of stuff secret because that's just our thing.
Yeah.
And I don't want to expose, like, all of that to the world. But she likes when I get up and play rough with her. She likes when I spin her around, get her dizzy. Like, she likes stuff like that, and that, like, gets her heart rate up. And so when I see her, I'll grab her. I'll show you videos on my phone of me squatting her on my back in my front yard. I spin her around in my arms. She loves stuff like that. Only me, though. Nobody else has ever done that with her, but are capable of it.
She get to see you play?
Yeah, she gets to. She's terrified of flying, as I am as well, but I fly twice a week, which is crazy. she gets to see me fly once. I mean, see me play once a year. She'll, I convince her to get on a plane, and she'll come on up, and she'll enjoy it.
So that's got to be special.
Oh, I love it. She'll have to see like two or three games, stay a few weeks if you want to get a couple games, but
yep.
She's only flying one time.
So. Yep. There's a moment with you, and I, this conversation, which is why I love having these kind of conversations, because you start with one path you want to go down, and things veer off as things come up. And as myself and the fans, I know, love getting to know you, and you're going to play such a huge role here, not only this season, but down the road to the 49ers. There was one moment in camp. Obviously, I love seeing the long touchdowns and you making big plays, connecting with Brian Hoyer. But there was one moment where I locked on you and noticed what you did. And it was probably the hardest or scariest moment of camp, and that was when Donovan Newsom went down. And that was something this is my fifth NFL season with a couple of different teams. I've never seen anything like that in camp. And so it was one of those things that it just kind of, your heart stops a little bit. And obviously, everyone comes around. Everyone's very concerned. But you sat there no more than 10 feet away from him on one knee praying for maybe 10-plus minutes. I mean, people came and went and whatever, and you were just like, had that moment. What goes through your head when you see something like that?
What if it was me? What would I want somebody to do? And that's the same situation with Austin, the kid who came with Make-A-Wish. Not to take the attention off of my teammate, but I treat people how I really take that to heart. I treat people how I want to be treated. That's why I walk around smiling every day. I walk around happy because I want that same energy. I don't want nobody giving me that bad energy. How you doing?
Oh, man.
No. If you ask me how I'm doing, I'm always great. I'm always in a great mood because I want how I feel to affect you, because it is. So if I'm feeling great, then I'll rub off on you and be like, dang, he having a good day. Like, he always happy. Well, so when I got on my knee to pray, I just kept on asking God to give him strength to be okay and to guard him and allow everything to be okay. And I just kept praying over and over. And I wasn't going to leave until really they made me, and they tried to make me, but I still prayed and just wanted to make sure he was okay.
And, thankfully, not to say just a concussion, but he is okay and moving, and such great news, such a scary moment here of camp. I want to circle back. Before I let you go, we were talking track a little bit, obviously went off course, and I'm so happy that we did, but again, like I said earlier, I'm just so fascinated by the Olympics thing, because I think what an honor it is, like I said, to wear USA across your chest. And so I'm curious for the one moment where you were just like, my goodness, this is unbelievable. You kind of had to pinch yourself, whether it's the opening ceremony, mm-hmm. warming up for your race, or your meet, where whether it was in Oregon where you found out you qualified to go to the Olympics and your mom was there. Well, give me one, maybe two, if there's a couple that really stick out in your mind, those moments that resonated so much with you where you just had to take that step back and pinch yourself that what I'm doing is absolutely incredible.
Opening ceremony was one of the best experiences of my life. The opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games 2012, London. Standing by LeBron James, standing by Kevin Durant, UT alum, Michael Phelps, Usain Bolt, Justin Gatlin, Allyson Felix, Sandy Richards Ross, all these great athletes.
You're giving me chills, man.
Standing by all of them, you could feel the energy. You can feel a winning spirit. And there's no greater country to compete for than America, because we have the most athletes every time. And despite all of the things that we go through in America during that period, it's always a great time when you're all together representing away from America. See, because in America, we aren't as united as the team we are, as the team is when we are across those waters. It's unreal. Like, every single person is all in it together. And it might sound cliche, but that's just the truth. And if you could experience it, if you could just take that walk with one another, Serena Williams, like, you get to see all these people competing, not just for their own name, but the name that's across their chest. And I feel like in America, if we pulled together and did things more like team players in a team sport, then the world would be a whole lot better. Because if you get to see that, and if you get to feel that, you don't know until you get to experience it, what it feels like to support somebody who doesn't look like you, who comes from somewhere totally different. But y'all, we got to come together and represent this same place. It's crazy, man. The type of energy, the feeling that you get from it is just crazy. And then my second great Olympic experience was having my mother and my grandmother there. They were there. First time out of the country, my mom's second time flying. Can you believe that? Her second time on a plane, she goes to London. My grandmother's first trip overseas was to London. Great experience. And they get to see this with me, so we got to experience it together.
Sports, man. Sports are incredible.
Sports are incredible, man.
Marquise, what a fun conversation. I can't thank you enough for your time. It's been a pleasure to get to know you. Can't wait to watch you this season. Best of luck, man. I know we'll be talking to you again soon.
Appreciate it.
That's Marquise Goodwin. We appreciate his time. I'm Joe Fenn. We'll see you soon right here on the 49ers Studios podcast.